Welcome to the Retro Rewind Podcast, episode number 3. Before we get started here, I want to say that this episode's audio quality is really not that good. I was hoping for a lot better audio quality, but Paul and my other guest hosts were really limited as to their time and couldn't record another time, so we just had to do the best we could with what we had. I'm still trying to work out the best way to record a Google Hangout, so if you have any tips, please send them on to me. Would love to hear that. But if you can get through the audio quality, I totally recommend listening to this week's episode. I thought it was a fun one on Masters of the Universe, and let's go ahead and get started with it.
Mission identified. Masters of the Universe. 1987. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Hi, I'm Francisco.
Hi, Francisco.
This is the podcast where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth watching today. My name is Francisco Ruiz, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Paul Powers. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Francisco. Do I have a question this week?
You do have a question this week. Your question this week is, let me bring it up here, in my outline. All right. So, who would win in a fight? Power Rangers Megazord or Voltron?
Voltron. Without even finishing the question, hands down. You know why? Because Voltron could jump through, and they both jump at each other, and they both land on the other side, and then the Power Ranger Megazord would be cut in half and slide in half.
I don't.
Voltron people. Hey, the Voltron fans would know. That's how they did it back then.
Okay. I would say I'm a Voltron fan, but I don't remember that at all.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, I haven't seen it in a while, so excuse me, right. Princess.
Oh, they stole the reference cartoon. All right.
And today we're joined by two special guests. Paul, why don't you go ahead and introduce them?
This is my brother, Josh.
Hello.
And would you like to introduce?
Yes, this is my girlfriend, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome, Josh and Sharon. So glad you could be here today with us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, definitely. Where did you guys come from?
Earth.
Oh, my gosh.
We just flew in from Birmingham, Alabama to visit a family here in L.A.
Nice.
Indiana.
Lower Alabama.
Okay.
Los Angeles. Oh, that's it. That's where we are.
California.
Yeah.
USA.
As opposed to all those other LAs.
Yeah.
Dreaming about the United States. All right. Well, Paul, why don't you tell us what we're going to be doing today?
All right. Today we're going to have our usual new tube segment. And as you heard in the intro, we're going to be doing our roundtable pizza discussion of Masters of the Universe.
Roundtable pizza?
Yeah, it's a pizza chain out here called Roundtable. So we're going to have a roundtable discussion. Sponsored by Roundtable Pizza, hopefully, maybe in the future.
Wow.
We'll give you the final
round roundtable. Well, hey, we'll run ads for you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Just give us a nickel at, what is it, RetroRewindPodcast.com.
Yes.
All right, and at the end, we'll give you a final verdict on whether you should watch Masters of the Universe, our opinion on that, and then wrap up with show announcements.
Awesome. All right, let's go ahead and get into our new tube segment.
All right.
New tube systems engaged.
Josh, why don't you kick us off? What's new on your tube these days?
Well, I've been trying to find some cool music to listen to lately. I did find a great band called Caravan Palace. They're a French electro swing and gypsy jazz band based in Paris.
Wow, that's quite a combination.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They have a song called Rocket For Me that it's like electro, it's like techno and swing music together. That's the best way I can describe it. And the music video is also really interesting, very cool to look at. It's kind of a throwback to 20s style animation, but it's very fluid, like flash animation.
Wow, cool.
Very fun music video, very fun sound. I even looked up the live performance. They do some jazz dancing. It's pretty fun. I highly recommend Caravan Palace, and especially the song Rocket For Me.
Very cool. And how about you, Sharon?
The only thing that ever comes to mind lately is Krispy Kreme, the rapper, from the South.
Oh, not the donut?
Not the donut.
Oh, there's a rapper named Krispy Kreme?
Yeah.
Well, he's not a real rapper.
Well,
he's not a serious rapper, let's say that.
Yeah.
Well, he only wraps his gift halfway? What do you mean?
Man, Paul, I was about to make a joke on that.
Step up
your game, sir.
How can I describe
he is
his best friend, Mike Miller.
Moneymaker
Mike.
Moneymaker Mike, who doesn't say anything. He just kind of, they're about, what, they look like they're 17 years old or younger.
That's just like my brother.
Yeah.
Maybe my brother.
He is in Birmingham.
So does he rap or no?
He raps, but it's really funny because he raps very poorly and rhymes very poorly.
Tone deaf.
Tone deaf, and it's hilarious to watch.
But the videos are really well made.
And is it spelled like Krispy Kreme donuts?
Yes.
Yeah, like the donut. Just look up the baddest. That's
Krispy Kreme, the baddest.
All right.
Because he is the baddest
of them all.
All right.
You would think he's being serious, but after a while you're like, this can't be real. So
it
looks like someone just trying to be a rapper and failing miserably.
Nice. That's what I want in my rappers.
Failure.
And apparently Beyonce thinks he's cute. In his own words.
In his own words, yes.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, let's hope he puts a ring on it.
All right.
Paul, how about you? What's new on your tube?
I saw The Hobbit.
Ooh. So
yeah, I didn't see it in high frame rate, but okay. I did see it in 3D IMAX. I'm going to see it in high frame rate just to see what all the talk and buzz is about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, it is very much a Lord of the Rings movie. I thought it was a fun revisit to Middle Earth, and the attention to detail just blew me away to see just the graphics and just the amount of detail they put into the scenes and the characters and everything. So it's a fun visit back to Middle Earth.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. We went and saw it, similar to you, we saw it in 3D, but not the 48 frames per second. But yeah, it's definitely a fun movie. Really enjoyed it. I was trepidatious that Peter Jackson splitting it up into three movies would make it for just sort of all this added fluff, but I actually appreciated all the sort of small character moments that usually would be cut from a long a shorter movie.
Yeah. So do you prefer the extended edition of Lord of the Rings?
Oh yeah, totally.
Then why wouldn't you want an extended version of Hobbit?
Because The Hobbit is one book. Lord of the Rings is three books. Okay.
All right. Well, so you can read The Hobbit in 9 hours or less?
Well, it's not just The Hobbit.
I'm not a very fast reader.
Okay, then. He's not a fast movie storyteller.
But it's not just The Hobbit, though. It's also the appendices that he's including in there.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
Right. I just said I was skeptical going in, but...
Yeah. And I was the same way too. Like, after watching it, I was like, I'll watch three movies. Yeah. I'll watch four movies of this because it was so much like Lord of the Rings. That was my fear there. It's like, it's going to be a whole different kind of thing. But because they both draw from the appendices, it really feels like the same universe.
Yeah, totally.
Speaking of universe. No, wait, we have to do your new two
things. Yeah, totally trying to rob me, Paul. Gosh. My new tube this time is a game, which, Paul, I bet you'd appreciate, and maybe Josh and Sharon, you would too. It's called Middle Manager of Justice.
Whoa!
It's what you do is you play...
For what system?
It's free on iOS.
Okay, so it's Mac-based.
Well, you could get it on your iPhone. I have it on my iPad.
Yeah, but it's not for the PC then, or the Android.
So it's an app.
No, as far as I know, yeah, it's an app. It's just a game you can download. Essentially, you play. It's kind of like a sim style game, I suppose. You're a middle manager of this Justice League branch, not Justice League, but I forget what it's called. But essentially, you are managing when your group of superheroes go out to fight villains and how they're going to be powered up, what powers they're going to invest in. And it's just a fun game. It has some very fun humor to it. It's by the same guys that did Ratchet and Clank and some other games that I'm having trouble thinking of right now. It's the Double Fine Studios is the name of them.
So is it like World of Warcraft but with superheroes?
No, not at all. That's in World of Warcraft, you're taking on just one character. This is there's like you can have up to four heroes that you're managing what they do. It's more like a real-time strategy game, though it's not real-time.
Well, that's good, because I hate it when there's real-time. It moves too fast. Psychonauts, they also did.
Ah, yes, Psychonauts. Thank you. Yeah, I definitely recommend it, especially since it's free. Check it out. It's technically a freemium game, because you can, like, if you want to power up your characters faster, you can buy coins or whatever to do that, but the game is called Middle Manager of Justice, or maybe cool. Middle Management of Justice.
Mr. Manager.
It's Mr. Manager of Justice.
No. He was making. Arrested Development fans get it. Okay.
Oh well, fine.
Yeah. Yes, what a snobby comedy nerd.
Well, you know what? I think with that, let's explore the universe with Masters of the Universe.
Alert! Alert! Target located. Spoilers incoming. Engaging retro rewind reactor.
At the far end of the universe, there is a planet ruled by a being of utter evil. And there is only one man who dares challenge him. They are locked in a battle to the death. A battle that will take them across the heavens.
Stop him!
A battle that will finally be fought.
I want them hunted down and brought to me!
Across the face.
Police! Nobody move!
Of Earth.
I think I'm gonna need some backup.
Can you show us the way?
Of course!
No! Somebody help me!
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be Masters of the Universe. Live the adventure.
All right, Paul, let's go ahead and have you give us some of the technical breakdowns of the movie.
All right, the movie Masters of the Universe was it came out in 1987, directed by Gary Goddard, written by David O'Dell and three more people. It stars Dolph Lundgren, who, you know, the villain in Rocky IV, Frank Langella, Meg Foster, and of course Courtney Cox. And Tom Paris from Voyager.
That's where I've seen him.
Oh. Yeah, Robert Duncan McNeil.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Sorry.
You're welcome. And Billy Barty, of course.
And Billy Barty, yes.
And a whole bunch of others.
Anything else about the movie?
Anything else you want to know?
I know a little bit of trivia about this.
It was released August 7th, 1987.
It almost spawned a sequel. It was going to be, but it was turned into the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Cyborg.
Oh.
And yeah. Actually, we'll touch on that a little bit later. But
oh, thanks for sharing
that. Oh, no, that's fine.
The budget for this movie was $22 million, but it only made $17 million.
That's not such a good short
movie. Yeah. Opening weekend made almost $5 million.
I guess that's good.
No.
Well, 1987.
It might be. I don't know. I doubt it.
That's almost like $6 million today.
Yeah. Which is not good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Paul. Sure. Sharon, would you read us a synopsis of the movie?
Certainly. Planet Eternia and the Castle of Grayskull are under threat from the evil Skeletor, who wants to take over the planet. A group of freedom fighters led by the heroic He-Man are accidentally transported to Earth by a mysterious cosmic key, which holds the power to make Skeletor all-powerful. Once on Earth, He-Man joins alliances with two teenagers as they attempt to find the key and return home. All
right.
Awesome. All right, with that taken care of, Paul, why don't you tell us what is one of your like top memories of Masters of the Universe?
Well, I remember being excited about this movie coming out because I enjoyed the He-Man cartoons as a kid. I liked to enjoy or collect the action figures, play with them, and all that stuff. So I was really excited for this to come out. I remember actually going to the theater and seeing this more than once because in one of the showings that the projector broke and melted the screen.
You remember the moment?
Yeah, because everyone is yelling out, "Free popcorn!"
No, the moment in the movie.
No.
Okay.
Maybe when they were going through the boxes of the junkyard, maybe. I don't remember. I remember Courtney Cox from there thinking back then, okay, this is someone to keep an eye on. She, in my opinion, was a good actress, someone to go on to do a lot of good things. And I was right.
You called it.
Yeah. But anyway, this was before she got her nose job, so I like it in a retrospect that way.
I didn't realize she had a nose job.
Well, if you notice in the TV show Friends, her nose line from the bridge down to the tip is a lot thinner.
Huh.
And if you do a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, because that's what I do. Side-by-side comparisons of celebrities.
Yeah.
So how did that compare with actually watching it again?
She looked young. Yeah, she definitely was before her nose job.
I mean, the feelings of like being excited to watch it multiple times and all that.
I was excited to see it again because it'd been a long time since I'd seen this, and it was more of a nostalgic reference. So I was excited to revisit those memories again.
Oh, okay, cool. Josh, how about you? What's something that stuck out in your mind from before you watched it?
Very similar, because I was with Paul at least one of those times. I remember seeing this in theaters. I must have been about 5 or 6 years old at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember we had a choice at the movie theater whether to see the Care Bears movie or Masters of the Universe, and I think we chose well. So that's like the before. I don't remember the screen melting or anything like that. That only happened to me once, and that was the Rugrats movie.
Oh, okay.
That you remember.
That's the only one I remember that happened. But, yeah, so I loved it. You know, I loved He-Man growing up. Especially that was Paul's same thing mainly. So, you know, I had some of the toys, but he had way more. Mm-hmm. So, but it was cool. You know, you're like, hey, there's all of my action figures on the screen, you know. So
they look different.
Well, He-Man looked pretty. They have the same build almost. But there was no Orko. I remember that. Orko was really He was the wizard.
Yeah, totally.
And we're all like, who's Gwildor?
Yeah. You know?
And then after I saw the movie, I'm like, I want the Gwildor action figure. And I got it.
And compare, so you rewatched it. Did those same feelings still stick around?
It's funny. Those feelings, I guess, you know, I've seen it several times. It's been a while since, but it's funny how much I remember of it. Like, and it depreciates over time for me as far as the, every time I watch it, it's just, you know, as time goes on and special effects, when it gets more and more spoiled by special effects, the chintzier the He-Man, you know, Masters of the Universe looks, the more it has more in common with Star Wars than it does, you know, something newer. So it's more of becoming of its own era as time goes on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely it's not aging well.
And I want to talk about, you brought up how Orca was in the movie. And I remember when I watched it, I was thinking, I saw the Gwildor character come on. I'm like, huh, why isn't Orko flying? Why isn't he wearing his red top hat? Because I thought that was supposed to be Orko. And then I'm like, why does Orko like KFC? And why does he have this tuning fork machine thing? As we find out, some of those things weren't quite right. But that I had that same sort of, or it wasn't, you realized that wasn't Orko. I kept thinking it was Orko, but when I first saw it.
Speaking of which, there were hardly any of the original action figures before the movie that I remember. There were, like, all the main ones from the cartoon, like, what's his name? Claptrap? The guy with the metal arm? Mm-hmm. Like, the villains? They have all these villains to choose from, and then they, like, make their own villains.
So, yeah, it was like, I think the Beastman was the only
Beastman and Evil-Lyn.
The
standards, you got Skeletor, obviously, you know, but like if you're doing, you know, extra ones, you have a whole bunch to choose from. It's a lot like Ninja Turtles 2. You got this whole cast of characters to choose from, and then you get Toka and Rezar. You're like, come on, there's so many more.
You got to think from it from a studio perspective. Here you have all these kids who already bought these toys. If you introduce new characters, they're going to buy more toys. So it's a money-making thing to have some of the old and introduce some of the new.
But here's the thing, Paul. What you could do is have the same characters, but the movie versions of them, which look cooler. So it could still be the same character. Oh, get the awesome action-y...
I already have the Ram Man version of the cartoon. Why would I want the movie version? If you have someone cool like Blade with, you know, all these knives as a villain, it was like, I'll have that.
If he looks cooler in the movie, then I'd want the movie version.
Oh, yeah, but if you don't have, there's also that philosophy, well, I already have that.
Well, we're looking at Ninja Turtles again. When they came out with the movies, they did the action figure version of the movie version of the action figures. Remember that?
It sounds like you want to do a Ninja Turtle movie.
I watched that all the time. I watched it pretty recently, though, so I don't know. Qualified?
I don't know. But anyway.
Anyway.
The universe.
But it's saying that's been done before, so that they did a toy line that made the movie version of an original toy.
Oh, sure, that's not uncommon.
Well, here, let me ask Sharon. Did you buy any toys when you were growing up? Like, I don't know what shows you liked as a kid, but...
I had a couple of My Little Ponies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
So
okay. I love my brother's Batman toys. Like, we would And I did a couple of, had Barbies, but I didn't really, they weren't as interesting as, like, Lola's Pet Shop, My Little Ponies, Batman, Cowboys and Indians. We even had a few of those.
Nice. Now, so let me ask you this. If you had, like, a My Little Pony, would you, and, like, they came out with a My Little Ponies live action movie with, like, actual horses, and would you buy those toys, do you think? That like looked more like horses, but were little My Little Pony themed.
Probably. That's a good point because I like the. There was also the like Grand Champions horses, which were more, you know, realistic and after actual breeds of horses.
Are those by Bryson or Who puts those out? Do you know?
That is a great question. I don't know. It's been years.
Okay. Christy, my wife, has some of those, so that's why.
Yeah, but My Little Ponies had the magic aspect, you know, and the fantasy, and Grand Champions had the kind of the real majestic beauty and all that. So mm-hmm. I don't know. The idea of combining the two would blow my mind.
That's Hasbro.
Okay.
My Little Pony is.
No, I was talking about the Grand Champion. Those
Okay.
Gosh. Work on your Google skills, Josh.
where are your Google skills? What are you doing?
I'm trying to control a show here. Jeez. Great. Let's see. So I brought up how I remembered the not Orko character. Something else that stuck out in my mind was I remember thinking it was weird that Skeletor had eyeballs.
And a nose almost.
I had forgotten about how the makeup wasn't very skull like. It was like white bony skin almost.
Yeah, that's actually something I remember differently. Like as a kid, I thought that was horribly done because.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like makeup on a face, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now it's like, considering the time and restraints that they had.
And how can you show emotion as well without the eyes?
And how do you show a not nose when you have a nose?
They don't have digital.
Yeah, there's no digital effects or anything. So it's like you have to have latex over a big nose where there is no nose.
No, here's what you do, guys. You hire an actor who doesn't have a nose.
There you go.
But what if you want the acting of Frank Langella?
Who has a nose? I'm an actor. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, step up for your art, dude.
Yeah.
No, I actually don't know really who Frank Langella is. What other do you guys know off the top of your head? What other movies he's in?
Yeah, he's probably most recently known for played Nixon in Frost Nixon. Okay, and he was he plays a lot of bad guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I remember most from Dave, the 93 movie with Kevin Klein. The
president. Another movie I haven't seen.
That's really
good. This is why I don't know who Frank LaGill is.
What about, he was in the Wall Street sequel.
Nope. This is quickly becoming Movies Francisco Hasn't Seen podcast.
Okay, what about Superman Returns? He played Perry White.
Forgettable.
he's a stage actor. He started out as a stage actor. Oh, he was also Dracula in the 79 Dracula movie.
Nope.
Haven't seen it.
Well, this is why you don't know who Frank Langella is.
Yeah, exactly. Did you know he was Skeletor in Masters of the Universe? Oh, that Frank Langella.
And actually, Dad, our dad was like, he was very impressed that they got him to play Skeletor. So I was kind of on the lookout if he ever came up in a movie again. And I think that's where I saw Dave. That was probably the next movie I saw that he was in.
Gotcha.
I was like, that's Skeletor. Weird, because he doesn't have a white makeup on.
Yeah. And you know, I think it was, I think he actually did a good job. And I think he almost had to play over the top because he's playing through his makeup. So especially that last scene where he's absorbed the universe's powers. He's like very like really hamming it up, but I think in a good way.
I remember an interview with him where he talked about playing that role, and he took it because his kids wanted him to.
Nice.
And it's just the fact that he's in this fantasy movie and they just told him that he could just go with it, and so he hammed it up, and he loved every second of it. And you could tell in the movie that's he's enjoying every word he's saying.
Mm-hmm. But getting back to the whole eyes, not him having eyes, Paul, you mentioned how it's hard to, or maybe it was Josh, but one of you said how it'd be hard to play emotion without eyes, but they do that in cartoons all the time. They get across emotion without different facial features, and
unless you have the Jim Henson Company doing right, that,
all right.
And also, this is film acting. I mean, you got close-ups, you know.
That's what I mean. Unless you have the Jim Henson Company doing the animatronic eye, I mean, because in the cartoons, his eye sockets move, which aren't supposed to move in a skeleton.
Sure.
To portray the emotion, then you really need to... Mr. Frank was so high and mighty that he said, look, if you cover my eyes, I walk. And they're like, okay, he has eyes.
And they need a different Skeletor toy, one with eyes.
No. I would like to see that section on IMDb, speculative trivia.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe this happened.
Yeah.
one moment, guys, as my microphone totally goes AWOL. Any other things that you guys remember from before that didn't quite jive with how you experienced it when rewatching it? Or in the case of Sharon,
not being in Eternia.
Oh, well, they were a little bit in the beginning.
Yeah, like, you're like, okay, here we go, He-Man movie. And then the next hour and a half about it is just all on Earth. And you never see the inside of Grayskull.
Yeah,
no, it's all take place in
Grayskull. No, you never see Snake Mountain, sorry.
Oh, you don't.
Sure. You have the two, that was the two, like, Snake Mountain versus Grayskull. And it's all in Grayskull, and... You're like, where's the villains? It's all.
I was disappointed that Castle Grayskull didn't look like a Grayskull, like in the cartoon.
But outside, they had a skull mouth.
Opening shot. See,
It's not forgettable.
Yeah, it's not very well established in the movie, and it doesn't look anything like the toy on the inside.
Yeah.
Or even the cartoon didn't look like the inside of the toy.
I think the cartoon looked closer to the toy.
Sharon, how about you as a first-time watcher of the movie? Anything sort of stand out to you as this is really weird or this is really awesome?
Those are your two choices.
This is also really stupid as an option.
Like the random detective there's the really stupid part.
He was the best part. One of the best parts.
He just kind of crowbarred in there.
Yeah, I was entertained by him, sure, but... one thing that I really did not enjoy laughed at, I guess, was He-Man's lips. He had such pretty lips.
They were always kind of like Play-Doh and open, slightly open and kind of frowning.
Yeah, pretty and all, and it's not a compliment.
Oh, like Stallone lips.
Oh, yeah. Bots to learn.
Yeah,
he was
like,
go back.
I could learn from
but
this.
But it's also like they were numb the whole time. He kind of had the, because he was trying to be, I don't know.
Well, no, I thought because he's foreign.
Yeah.
He's a dream. It's a little bit distracting.
He-Man's lips, yeah.
Yeah, and...
How about his accent? No?
How about the dialogue? Dialogue that's definitely stood out this time watching. It's just, it is corny and cliche, and like, it is like some movies you go along with the cliche. It's like, hey, it's fun. This is like, hey, let's go along. And like, someone who tells a bad joke, they're like, man, if they told it right, it could have just landed. But it was just like a bunch of these cliches that just don't land.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's more direction oriented for the kid watching. Okay, guys, let's go here.
Oh, gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, because it certainly was more geared for kids than it was for adults.
Yeah, so how did that, like, that aim towards kids?
Did it feel like it was aimed towards kids or general audience? Or
aimed towards kids, but hoping a general audience would enjoy it, too. I mean, that was the aim.
Okay.
Yeah. It made me, I don't know, it had the, because I did see, I have vague memories of watching, you know, like, the Conan movies and Red Sonja, and things that kind of, you know, fit that genre as well, it just made me want to watch those. truth. Yeah.
And you know what?
But, you know, I actually saw those, so I can't even remember if they're as good or worse, you know.
Oh, don't worry. Conan's much better.
Which version?
Oh, there is a newer version. That's right. I haven't seen the newer version.
You should acknowledge.
The Conan the Barbarian with Arnold.
They're gonna do another one with Arnold. Yeah, he's in talks with it.
Conan?
Yeah. With Arnold, yeah.
I don't know how that will work. Unless he's Conan as the older, like, he's the old king, which I think is some of the, what's his name? Robert Howard, I think, is the original creator. Anyways, that getting way sidetracked. I want to touch on Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. And did you guys, I felt like, I mean, how did you guys feel? Did you feel like he was very much a generic cookie cutter hero? Like there wasn't much depth to him?
I think he was hired for his pecs.
But even the character himself, how it was written, do you think there... I didn't feel like there was a lot of depth. And I don't... I remember there being much depth when I saw it as a kid, but I wasn't really looking for things like that back then.
It felt like it was a continued... Like, you know, they were just hoping that everyone who saw it, you know, was well acquainted with his character.
Mm.
You know, and so they kind of cheated on that, I guess.
Sure.
Use that as a crutch.
They used more character development time with the Earthlings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
I enjoyed that story. I think Tom Paris's character was a little too overprotective of like, oh, forget everybody. I just want to be with the girls.
Yeah. So one of the lines I wrote down was one that Gwildor.
Say Gwildor. Will with the G. Gwil.
Okay, Gwildor.
There you go.
So Gwildor says to Tom Paris or Kevin.
Yes. Sorry.
he says, "Let me find it here." No, I had it written down. And apparently I can't find it. That's great. But it was something to the effect of everyone is unique in this world. If you weren't you, then...
There's no one else like you?
Yeah, there's no one else like you.
I like that line, however.
Yeah, I totally like that line too. And I thought they could have... I thought that was an awesome line to use for him. And it would have been so much more impactful if He-Man had been this cookie-cutter hero, if there was a lot more to him that he's unique too. And I think Man-at-Arms has his unique moments. Teela even has a few unique moments.
Well, they all are. But He-Man's unique enough, that's why Skeletor wanted him. Everyone has their focus, uniqueness, no?
Except for He-Man, which I feel like
Because Skeletor wanted everyone dead but him. That doesn't make him unique. That makes sure. Skeletor's unique to him.
He just has given Skeletor a lot of trouble, but...
Well, that's what makes him unique.
You know what else makes him unique? His pecs. No one else has a chest like he does. Okay, so... That's like saying he's the star of the movie. That makes him unique because he's the star. That's interesting.
People are born under the right stars on their arms.
Oh, gosh. All right, well, I guess I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to disagree with you, Paul, then, if you think that was uniqueness. But whatevers. Let's see. What did you guys think about... I don't know if you guys noticed this, but... Courtney Cox just meets He-Man, like he saves her, right? Remember that scene? Then it cuts away, I think, to Kevin and the music store guy. Then it comes back to He-Man and Courtney Cox, and apparently he's told her the whole story, and she's just totally accepting of it. She has no skepticism. She's like, oh, okay, what do we do now? So I'm thinking she must see lots of sci-fi movies or something to just totally accept this whole story. But then later on, she completely falls for the whole, oh, my mom's out there, even though she's been dead this whole time. You'd think she'd see that coming if she's just acquainted with thoughts like that?
I think if your parents died and all of a sudden there they are right in front of you, your judgment will be weakened.
It was a very recent happening.
Yeah, that just happened. So they were like, and she says there's no time to explain. And they're like, oh, and you're just so happy. They're like, oh, can you just get this for me? Like, whatever, you know, you're just... I can understand that from a writing perspective. It's not that strong.
I think it would have...
explained it, at least.
I mean, I understand why they did that. I wonder what it would have been like had it been a similar ploy used on Kevin instead, just because he seems a little more... like a weaker personality, a weaker mind than others.
Oh.
I do. I also find her, like, as far as trusting, like, I think she trusted He-Man a little bit too much at first because she had all these strange creatures fighting, like, attacking her. And then here's another strange person saying, no, we're the good guys. And she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and there's,
she doesn't know how to get away from these other guys who are trying to kill her. I don't think she feels like she has much of a choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
if anybody's going to protect her, it might be this guy.
Okay. That's a good point.
Or just run away from all of them.
He looks like a hero.
He does.
He
is true.
He looks just like He-Man.
He does have the pecs. So.
The pecs, exactly.
Very trustworthy.
Sharon, I'm curious what you think of this interchange. I'm actually glad you're on today because... do you guys remember in the music store when the Skeletor stormtroopers are trying to come down and get to Teela and Man-Arms and He-Man? Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
Okay. So Teela.
That's it.
Yeah. That's all. Okay. Moving on. Next. No. So Teela comes out from the back and comes out and she. She stands up and shoots a bunch of the guys. And then she says, like, it looks like you guys needed a woman's touch.
Yeah.
But the way she shot was from her chest as opposed to down the sights. So to me, that's almost like saying women don't know how to shoot by saying you needed a woman's touch. Even though I know she hit everyone, but what do you guys think about that? Or what do you think about that, Sharon?
I was disconnected from that. That's probably not a detail I would notice anyway, even if it was super, like, all the special effects were amazing and, you know, but a lot of things like that I wasn't paying too close of attention to. I don't know a lot about, you know, shooting or martial arts, you know, any of that. So some of the fight scenes kind of reminded me of Power Rangers, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. So I discounted them and I was enjoying the story, the fantasy, all that. More than paying so much attention to those.
So let me ask you, when the girl came in and shot, was that like a heroic, yay, and girls fighting, or was that a deterrent?
Yeah, it struck me as silly.
Oh, okay.
Probably because they didn't do it as well.
Truth be told, I don't know if it's because we had it on kind of quiet at the beginning or what, but I did not fully realize that Man-at-Arms was called Man-at-Arms until she said Woman-at-Arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which then was a little funny once it dawned on me, oh, she's saying that because,
that's
a little funny.
Maybe if it was total cheese.
Yeah, I could, I mean, sometimes, you know, that even though I'm not the biggest feminist in the world, I still have that great, girl power.
Oh, totally.
But that did not, that was totally, it was an eye roll moment.
And I think I can think of, like, a moment where it does work is in Lord of the Rings, where, what's her name, stabs the king.
That's
Ring.
Crazy.
That's from the book, though, Paul.
Says, I am no man, and she stabs him in the face. See, I think that's where it does it well.
Yeah,
it's still cheesy, but, I mean, you compare those two moments, there's an obvious winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is, like, deflated woman power stuff, and that one was awesome. Anyway,
now I've been sort of spearheading a lot of these questions. Do you guys have other things you want to bring up or touch on before I continue?
One of the things that surprised me was I found the opening title music, the soundtrack, I thought was very classic. I like the classic orchestral movement. I thought it was good. I enjoyed that opening, and I wondered.
why that didn't catch on more. It's probably because the movie didn't catch on more. But if the movie had caught on more, then I think this would have been a theme song we would have heard more often. And a note on the composer, Bill Conti is an amazing composer, very underrated. Like, I mean, you think of Danny Elfman, John Williams, Bill Conti should be up there. I mean, he like does all the Academy Awards music, very orchestral stuff. Probably best known for like the Rocky theme. So the fact that they got him, and you listen to that and you think, oh, Star Wars ripoff, or you know, John Williams ripoff.
It did sound reminiscent of Superman.
But the fact that they got someone as talented as Bill Conti, and it's almost like they ask him, it's not enough like Star Wars, or it's not enough John Williams style. We couldn't afford John Williams, but we can afford you. You're still good, but we really want John Williams. Put that under the speculative IMDb trivia there.
Yeah, there you go.
I thought it wasn't bad.
No, not at all. It certainly wasn't detracting from the film.
If you're not acquainted with that knowledge of who Bill Conti is, then I feel like the film is forever kind of cursed with, you know, oh, listen to them trying to imitate Star Wars and get, you know, there's a couple of themes, I mean, in particular, that really sounded like, oh, we're on the Death Star now.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally.
That was one of my notes, thinking about like how much Star Wars it really is, and that I didn't pick up on as a kid.
Helmets.
Stormtroopers. It's funny, as a kid, you don't pick up on the similarities as much. You just think, here's another fun thing. Mm-hmm. As an adult, you're like, I've seen this already.
I'd say it totally works for kids.
It works for kids.
Yeah, totally.
I do have a couple things, too.
Yeah, go for it.
It says, like they treat in the credits Meg Foster as Evil Lynn as like a special, oh, we got Meg Foster here. Like, I think it's like her name stands out in the credits. Mm-hmm. And kind of the same thing with Frank Langella. I'm like, oh, I wonder, I'll keep an eye on her, see what she, you know, if she shows up in something that I'll know. And Frank Langella, that happened. Meg Foster, never saw anything. And even looking at her, you know, filmography, I'm still like, why is this an amazing catch for them, you know?
Maybe she was in that sort of like how Major League Sports, there's like sometimes you get that first draft and then they go nowhere.
That's, you know, the same thing. Like they got Courtney Cox and they're like, you know, hoping, and they actually accidentally got one really good.
See,
I've always confused her as what's the actress that was in Cheers that she was also
Christy Alley.
That's who I always thought that was.
And I, you know what, I confused Tom Paris's character with Paul Rudd, who was also in Friends, which is weird.
If they were to remake this movie, Paul Rudd would play that role.
Yes.
Well, if they remade it like 10 years ago. Now that he's older, but yeah.
Cool. Other things that you guys like to talk about? I'm curious if any of you have any thoughts about the whole, like in the cartoon, the power of Grayskull is very much translates to He-Man's power. Do you guys have any thoughts on that in the movie?
It's hard to tell because that's where the movie deviates. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to compare. There's a lot of things that are different from the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering that as a kid, like when his sword went away, his sword was stolen. He never changed to Prince Adam. You know, there's a lot of things that...
And Battle Cat. There was no Battle Cat.
Yeah.
I never really missed that, though.
I did as a kid watching.
I did too. I was like, where's Cringer and Battlecat?
And, you know, why, you know.
Green tigers aren't very easy to find, you know.
Yeah. And the sorceress said, where's her bird outfit?
I remember. Like,
I mean, she had sort of a feather collar, but yeah.
I could get... like the reinterpretation of her costume, but what I didn't get was that she's so important to the story,
but you don't know
but
why.
She doesn't move. She's in the very beginning, the very end, and she's just almost a non-character. She might as well have been like a diamond, you know, that was the source of power, other than a character like in the cartoon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
they could have done a lot more, I think.
Yeah, I definitely felt that it would have made so much more sense if going from the cartoon, which the cartoon came out in 83 and this came out in 87. If it doesn't make a lot of sense that once Skeletor takes the sword, that He-Man still has his same amount of power. And so, like you're saying, Paul, that doesn't really translate. And I actually read Wikipedia about this, and it turns out the filmmaker was basing this on the movie, on the mini comics that came out pre-cartoon. So in those, there wasn't this whole Grayskull was the source of power in the sword, and there was no Prince Adam. It was just He-Man, and he is more of a barbarian type. And so with that in mind, it sort of makes sense why there's a lot of these things left out. But at the same time, if you're making this movie this 4 years after the cartoon comes out, and it's because the cartoon is a hit that you're making it, you really should buy into some of those things that made the cartoon such a success.
But you're asking the studios to use logic.
Oh, yeah.
I can think of an example where this actually worked, where they deviated strongly from the cartoon, and it was a huge success.
Go for it.
The first Ninja Turtles movie.
I will agree with that. It was...
And it got worse when they got a little goofier and more like the cartoon.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's a matter of quality superseding it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if they had all these things, maybe a lot more time and money, they could have made something really awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we wouldn't maybe... And as kids, you know, it's like when our expectations aren't fulfilled, you know, if it would have been an amazing movie, we would care maybe more about the movie than the cartoon, you know, in an ideal world.
Yeah, totally.
So the fact that it's not that great of a movie, if we see the cartoon, it's like, there's the source material, maybe just been more like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, back to the Ninja Turtle movie again, huh?
Yeah. let's review it.
Any other things? I have one more topic I'd like to discuss, but any other things you guys want to bring up? Especially in terms of comparisons between when you saw it as a kid versus nowadays.
I wondered if I would find anything in the movie that would correlate to what it was that made He-Man... I had a nightmare as a kid where He-Man was chasing me down the hall.
Oh, wow.
He was the bad guy.
Huh. Interesting.
Very intimidating.
They can be.
Great power comes great responsibility. Right. How are you going to use your pecs for good or for evil?
Nice, Paul. All right. Well, I don't really have any comments on that, but thank you for sharing. Josh or Paul, any other thoughts?
That's pretty much it for me.
Okay.
I'll say that's it for me too.
Okay. So the last thing I wanted to touch on, which it sort of goes back to being very Star Wars-esque, but what did you guys think about the whole idea of Skeletor dying by going down the pit?
Oh, but here, did you know? He didn't die going down the pit.
Because
I found this out when we had the video, the VHS, and they just let the credits play. This was the first movie that I actually seen a scene after the credits, and all of a sudden, Skeletor's face pops up out of the vat and says, "I will be back."
Yeah,
and it's kind of like Back to the Future. You're like, okay, waiting for the sequel, and Back to the Future 2 actually did come out, but the human sequel apparently got changed into a cyborg.
An Abraham movie.
Yeah. Which I didn't know. But
and I don't know how that works, but
I haven't seen Cyborg. I do have a friend who did see it, and he said, yeah, I could see that. So okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but what you guys think about just the whole idea of evil being thrown down a pit?
Oh, like the Star Wars reference?
Star Wars reference or biblical references?
Evil being thrown? Oh, I thought you were talking about Daniel in the lion's den. I was like, Daniel isn't that. What do you mean, like the dragon being thrown down?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's an interesting idea that you commonly see evil characters being thrown down a pit in movies to essentially vanquish them.
even if they come back later.
It's very dramatic and clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
well, it's not clean because you don't see them die. You don't know if they survive.
Well, it's what. Well, and it's an open-ended.
But the fact that what's weird though is that I thought it was a little convenient. Okay, he fell down the pit, and then the sorceress is free. It's like the power's been dispelled. I was like, okay, I guess I can believe that. It's a little too easy, and but if he was, I was like, he must be dead. But then he isn't dead. So then why is the sorceress free?
That's actually a really good point. Right. I didn't think about that.
He's too far away.
Yeah.
like he lost reception.
No Wi-Fi.
In the sequel, he gets like
extender.
Or a hotspot, kind of like hotspot. You know what? What stood out to me more? Okay, the first thing that stands out to me most about him falling down the pit is that shaft. I guess it's Empire Strikes Back, it's all, I mean, just like, they looked at that as like, can we do that? But instead of blue, just make it red.
Yeah.
It was that.
Can we have lightning come out of through his face while being thrown down?
But next to that is the fact that you hear him screaming and his mouth is clearly closed.
I didn't notice that either.
Okay, maybe I need new glasses, but
maybe it happened.
Now that you guys are
bringing it up,
like I want to read. I could be wrong. Let me say that I could be wrong, but it looks like his mouth is closed and you can hear him screaming.
Revival.
You know, if this were the cartoon and he didn't have eyes, that makes sense. You know,
but now that he does, he knows what he can do with those eyes.
Awesome, guys.
I guess we have to watch Cyborg to find out.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, with that, let's go to our Retro Rewind review, also known as the Moment of Truth.
All right. So, this is where the whole idea of this podcast is recovering the classics. So, we're trying to find out, is this a classic or no?
Yeah. So, I'll go ahead and start with Sharon. Do you think Masters of the Universe is a classic or just second class, and why?
I would go with second class, I think. Yeah, because to me, it just has the nostalgia factor, and it doesn't hold up without that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Josh, how about you?
Definitely second class. I guess I kind of already gave my opinion earlier, but it does not age well, and it's continuing not to age well, becoming more of a product of its time. Mm-hmm. It's still fun. It's almost fun in a kind of era kind of way. Like, Star Wars ripoff, Conan ripoff, kind of like, and fans, I mean, the series is still continuing, so it's kind of this little oddity.
That's true.
Nostalgia, gimmicky kind of like a moment in time. It's interesting and not dumb fun. Mm-hmm. It's like sit back and laugh. So I'll give it at least that much.
See, and all those reasons you mentioned are the reason why I think that it holds up in the nostalgic fun factor.
Okay.
So that's why it's for me, it's a classic because it has that nostalgic fun factor.
Mm-hmm.
When you're with a group of friends and you're like, let's put on a dumb movie or a fun dumb movie that's, has anybody, seen this in a while or you haven't seen this? Or, it's not like, you need to see this, but it's like, hey, let's put this on.
Yeah, and Sharon, you haven't seen it, so, and you enjoy the dumbness, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Well, knowing that it's an 80s film, but I will say the best part of the whole film is when the cop says, well, he doesn't get up and say, eat lead, slackers, but it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
he says, you want to play games? Let's play games.
Yeah.
And they start unloading the shotgun.
Yeah, that's by far the best moment of the whole movie, in my opinion. I would watch that just for that.
Yeah, even as a kid, that was my favorite moment.
Oh, yeah. And
it's still holds up. Nice. Okay. For me, I think I'm going to have to agree with Josh and Shannon. The only only by a hair, which I know that's probably surprising for you, Paul.
Yeah.
I think the movie was fun. I wasn't like really bored with it while I was watching it. I was like, oh, this is engaging. I thought the effects overall were good, and there were a lot of nice moments. The one thing that holds it back, though, is that He-Man is just not an enjoyable hero to me. He's just like,
And that's the key thing.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. That character is second class. And I think that's the difference between, like good movies are fun, mm-hmm. bad movies are fun. It's the really bad movies are the boring, uninteresting ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you have the most boring, uninteresting thing about the movie is He-Man.
Yeah. The
main character.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not the main character.
Well, yeah, it's not He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which maybe that's why they didn't title it that way, because they're like, kind of boring.
Like the teenager? Skeletor? Well, the most character development is on the teenager, but Skeletor got the highest billing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of the teenagers, I did want to mention, it's very much throwback to the 30s and 40s. Like, you look at, like, Abbott and Costello movies and other kind of...
That's who they remind me of.
No, hold on. Abbott and Costello always were the side characters. It was always the... they always threw in a young teen couple in love to try to launch...
the story, the plot?
Yeah. Like, that was always the story. And then you had all the characters decorate that. You see, all the Abbott and Costello rarely starred in their own movies. It was always this young couple in love.
So this time, the young couple in love were... It backfired.
Yeah, it backfired. Right. Like it's just, we're in a different era, or we were in a different era then, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So again, second class for me. So, I guess this week, we get a strong second class for Master of the Universe.
So would you say Masters of the Universe is more of a classic than The Rocketeer?
For me personally, yes, just because it had good pacing.
All right. Well, this is the rewatch.
Didn't have to.
And for whatever reason, a lot of the...
It doesn't have Timothy Dalton.
Well, Timothy Dalton was strong. I like Timothy Dalton and.
But Rocketeer didn't have Frank Langella, so.
Well, see, I knew who Timothy Dalton was. I didn't know who Frank Langella was. But...
Oh, there you go.
Maybe that's why I found Frank Langella more interesting, or I don't know. Anyways, just for that fashion. I think it's the same in terms of the hero. I think Billy Campbell's Cliff Secord and Dolph Lundgren's He-Man were both middling and not that interesting to watch. But in terms of the overall story and just sort of I think the visuals in Masters of the Universe was a bit more engaging. And just, the overall pacing was
better. All right, that makes sense. Just wanted to clarify.
Okay, good. Thank you for clarifying.
And I think I might have to agree. Like, I haven't watched Rocketeer in a while, but even as a kid, that was probably the thing that was like, it was very long and boring, but still entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Masters of the Universe had something going on every scene.
See, and it actually turns out, I believe The Rocketeer was either the same length as Masters of the Universe or a little shorter. So that says something.
Yeah.
I think it was longer. All right, but with that, thank you all for giving your opinions this time around. And so now I think we can firmly say that if you're trying to decide on whether to rewatch Masters of the Universe, you don't need to spend your time. Unless you're exactly like Paul, then you should watch it again. Well, let's move on to our announcements and feedback.
ComSat Online. Receiving incoming transmission.
So let's go ahead and this is part where I'd like to tell our audience if there's anything any of us would like to promote, like any projects we're working on or, you know, new raps we're making or anything like that, and how best, in case anyone from our audience really connected with you, how best they could contact you. So, Paul, let's start with you.
My name is Paul Powers, and you can connect with me on Facebook. go to what's the Facebook page? Is it Retro Rewind on Facebook? Then find me on there. You can
contact me there or contact me at Paul J. Powers for Twitter.
And Facebook was facebook.com/retrorewindpodcast.
All right. And you can find me, Josh Powers, at, well, if you want to check out, I do a hilarious commentary for some movies at iriffs.com.
Oh, cool.
Just
how
look up
that?
Iriffs?
Yes. It's not like the name Iriff or like.
Oh, no, not Iriff. Like in the I. Iriff, like you riff a movie.
Oh, okay. So IRIFTS?
IRIFF.
Oh.
S. So iriffs.com.
Gotcha.
And just search under, it's a offshoot of Riff Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically fan made commentaries, but it allows other people to make their own groups and,
cool.
and
oh,
do
nice.
Their own commentary stuff. So you just look up Treacher Riffs. well, so yeah, Treacher Riffs, we do Lost in Space, Congo, we have some shorts. And people seem to like them, so you can
awesome.
Find my work there.
Cool. And Sharon.
I'm Sharon Collins, and if you want to contact me,
just say hi.
Just say hi. No, yeah.
Do you see her on the street?
I'm on Facebook along with a billion other Sharon Collinses.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes it easy.
There you go.
And I'm Francisco Ruiz. Nothing new to promote this week, but if you want to contact me, like Paul, find me on the Facebook page, facebook.com/retrorewindpodcast. And that is it for this week's show. Paul, would you tell people how they can contact the show in general? And what we're going to be doing next time. No, we didn't discuss it, so that may change.
I was about to say, next time we'll see. Because Francisco wants to review The Truman Show as this Christie, but I don't think it's a classic. I don't even really want to watch it again.
Maybe that's the exact reason to watch it, then.
You're going to hear some feedback. You'll get emails about that.
but you can contact us and tell us how you would rate it at... sorry, the email is feedback@retrorewindpodcast.com. And then we include it as part of the show.
Yeah, and I was thinking, well, how come no one's been giving us feedback? Well, it's because we haven't really officially launched yet. We're launching on the 1st of January, so that's why we probably haven't gotten anything.
Yeah.
So we'll expect a landslide of feedback afterwards.
Oh, sure, because everyone's going to be tuning in.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, no sarcasm there.
Nope, not at all. Well, thank you all for listening, and thank each of you for being on the show. It's awesome to have you all. And we'll
You're
see.
You're quite welcome.
We'll see you next time on the Retro Rewind Podcast.
This is an audio podcast. You can't see us.
Yeah, we'll hear you next time.
We're not hearing them. They're hearing
us. Okay, I'm playing the outro now.
All right.
Retro Rewind mission complete. Proceed to Nat Point Omega and return to base.